You are listening to The Effective Statistician, episode number 56, How to Train Non-Statisticians Effectively, 11 Tips to Succeed. Welcome to The Effective Statistician with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, the weekly podcast for statisticians in the health sector designed to improve your leadership skills, widen your business acumen, and enhance your efficiency. Please follow me on LinkedIn if you're not already doing it, because I'm sharing lots of useful content about being an effective statistician on LinkedIn regularly, more or less daily. So you can get much more information there as well. And also you can see who's connected with me, and you get useful information via the others that follow me as well. So today we are talking about trainings, and I'm pretty sure everybody has been asked to give some training on statistics to non-statisticians. And this is also a question from our listeners, so we are responding to this question with this episode. As I said, it's a pretty common topic. However, there's a huge variety in terms of how these trainings are delivered. And over the years, I had good and bad trainings. I delivered good and bad trainings and have a lot of experience in such way and honed in on doing better trainings over time. And today I'm summarizing this in 11 tips in terms of getting your training delivered really, really effectively. So keep on listening. This podcast is created in association with PSI, a global member organization dedicated to leading and promoting best practice and industry initiatives. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to special interest groups, the video on demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. There's actually a reduced rate available at £20 for non-high income countries, and it's just £95 for high income countries. So it's really no-brainer to become a member, especially given all the access to all these different things. Personally, I really like all the webinars. Visit the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about the webinars and all the other PSI activities, and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of The Effective Statistician, and this time it's again an episode between Benjamin and myself. Hi Benjamin, how are you doing?
Hi Alexander, very well. Late at night.
Yeah, as usual, our Tuesday evening recordings. But that is always quite a good fun to have.
It is.
So today we actually talk about a topic that pretty much every statistician stumbles over in his or her career on a rather frequent basis. It's about training other non-statisticians about statistics topics.
Yeah, indeed. This is something where everyone comes across talking about statistical problems or questions with your colleagues or at university. If you did some, you know, supported PhD students from medics and so on. So there's a lot of things, and this is a quite relevant topic for everyone.
Yeah. And today we talk about more these kind of formal training sessions, so where you actually get a lot of people into a room or via a virtual meeting or something like this, where you get together and really talk deeply about statistics. It's not these, let's say, 5-minute updates on what a p-value is, which pretty much everybody comes across from on a regular basis, but it's more about how you can set up these trainings for non-statisticians in an effective way. And it's really about 11 tips that I gathered over more than 2 decades that helped me to identify what are good ways to do it and what are kind of not so good ways to do it. And Benjamin, when first did you kind of train non-statisticians on statistics?
Long time ago. I don't know when it was actually. It was the beginning of my my career as a statistician, so back in university. So when I was supporting statistics for geology. And, you know, we did all the exercise there together. And so I kind of prepared for to explain specifics on statistics, very basic statistics in the university course at that time.
So. Yeah. I also started at my university time and since then went further and goes up until today, basically. And there's also lots of kind of general statistics trainings available. There's lots of things on the internet, lots of YouTube videos. There's some organizations that offer these general on-site training in terms of statistics. So there's lots of other sources you can actually pull from.
Yeah, and actually, I suppose like everyone can imagine how the situation is. So you enter a room and you expect, somebody to feed you with knowledge and you know, update on specifics, but it's not actually your topic. So, you know, it's somebody else from different department, different group, different something you would like to learn, but you haven't been involved into. So you can basically imagine. So what would be the kickoff for that one? So if you enter a room, if the training starts, so what would be the one that's really just, you know, kicking you off the seat to make you're involved and interested in the topic?
Yeah, and that is actually where lots of these general trainings fall flat.
Excellent.
They kind of start with these, what's the mean and what's the standard deviation and what's the p-value and things like that. And that is comes across as, from a first glance, of being irrelevant to the audience because they can't relate it to their day-to-day life. So that's why I love to start with a relevant example, a study that is relevant to the audience. So let's say you have a group of oncology people, and then you take a recent study from your company that was published, or maybe from a competitor's company that was just published, and where everybody knows the background about it, and that it may be even controversial. And then you really get the emotions engaged in there. And I think that is where lots of people don't understand how learning works. Learning works if you are emotionally involved. That's a very, very kind of basic thing for it.
Yeah. The opposite is, you know, it's a dry topic. So, you know, people get bored, people get not interested, and they just stop following you from the very beginning.
Yeah. And so this topic needs to be timely relevant. So these kind of trainings for you might need it in the future is usually not that attractive to people. It needs to be kind of, what's the term that I recently heard? Just-in-time learning, so to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's the best way.
The emergency of learning, I mean, the emotions and the drive to really pick it up, it's higher than the future, you know, the future position for something you might need in the future.
Yeah, and also it helps them to get some feedback and some learnings that they can directly use in their day-to-day work. So when they need to explain that, you know, if you do a training to medics, then they further need to communicate that to other business partners, to sales or to marketing or whoever. And so that's why they are really eager to learn in these kind of situations.
Yeah.
What is also really nice is that you speak in their language in these settings. You speak about their treatments, their endpoints, and their patients that they know of.
Yeah, that's real, because that's how they imagine their problems. So that's how they see their problems in their words and their endpoints and their patient. So that's very important to not fall back in your day-to-day stats language, but really use the words and the mindset that the audience has.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So what's the second tip then?
So I would say the second tip is collect questions upfront and track progress of answering them during the training. That is something that I very often do in terms of taking these questions. You know, what's on your mind regarding the study? What are kind of the topics that you don't understand? Where are kind of your pain points? What are the terms that you don't understand, the language, the stats language that you don't understand, where are the confusions? And I just kind of collect them all on a flip chart, for example.
Yeah, flip chart is a good idea because you can cross them off, you can go over, you can, you know, ask them if they are now answered, involve the people to, you know, to see, get the feedback and the question. Yeah.
Yeah. And that is also something that you can then at the end kind of can go through and make sure, okay, I covered this one. Oh, it's this one I maybe missed. And then you can still explain about it. And that way you can really give people the feelings that they're listened to. Their questions are taken seriously. And it's really also a very, very nice way to kind of get engagement at the beginning.
By the way, it's also quite good if you're experienced as a trainer to tick them off in between. Because at the end, you know, if you then fall back and say, well, you know, remember two hours ago when we talked about this topic. So it's really good if you manage to, you know, to tick it off once you really covered it at the moment, then this is even more interaction than it would be at the end of the training.
Yeah. Usually when I'm in the training and delivering the training, I'm so focused on the audience that I forget about the flip chart.
Yeah, that's fine. if the situation allows.
Yeah. And it also helps you to kind of funnel kind of your training in such a way that you're not talking about things that nobody raised. Because there could be lots of kind of side topics about the study or the topic of interest that you are passionate about from a stats perspective, but it's not a big topic for the audience.
Yeah, and then also be careful because if you ask the questions and you collect the questions and there are questions that you either are not able to answer with the training or during the training, then don't fall into, you know, trying to answer it just in between or something. But then keep this non-ticked off items for other trainings or for follow-up or something. Most of the people, like, except the one that asked the question, but all the other people are probably not interested in that question. And if it doesn't fit to the training, then, you know, it's not worth following in. So don't overdo it with answering all the questions, but then keep it off and use the non-ticked ones to follow up.
Yeah, there's sometimes, you know, people come up with completely unrelated questions.
Absolutely.
And these things are, you can follow up in one-to-ones or whatsoever. Yeah, absolutely. Another kind of nice way, so that's tip number three, is that you create regular meetings to engage people. So these one-time events to train things are good, but if you have regular interactions, that is even better because it helps you in a couple of different ways. First, it helps you to build relationship with people. If you say connect with you on a regular basis, that is really awesome. It raises your level as an expert. And it also helps you to train your presentation skills. Yeah, so you become better over time. And for me personally, I think presentation is one of these skills where you can really just learn by doing it. That is, you know, you can read about it, but really the learning is in the doing. And
Yeah, but this is also depending on the, you know, obviously depending on the topic, because you know, if it's on a very specific topic training, then you know this will probably be covered, you know, in one training. But there might also, especially during the conduct of a study, or you know, if you really build on developing something within the company, then these regular meetings where you have this interaction and the training, it's an ideal way of moving forward. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think there is sometimes you can actually use existing regular meetings that, you know, the specific audience that you have anyway has, you know, kind of maybe they have regular staff meetings or regular kind of update meetings, and you take maybe, you know, 15 minutes of these or half an hour of these longer meetings where you speak about these things. So,
yeah. Yeah, but the downside is that, you know, if you build up on, you know, developing the statistical skills and build up on one after the other, then the people have missed one of the meetings or two meetings for whatever reason, vacation or so, you know, they need to catch up. So it's a good idea, especially if it's between statistician who can easily then maybe pick up. Like if it's with non-statistician, and this is what we talking about, this is not always the ideal situation in these follow-up meeting, but could be an option. Yes.
Yeah. So of course, if my understanding is very often you need to repeat things anyway a couple of times. You need to repeat what a p-value is a couple of times. You need to repeat what multiplicity adjustment is a couple of times. You need to, you know, and that is also where I think these regular meetings make a lot of sense, because people don't get it from listening to it the first time. They get it from listening to it a couple of times and in different situations. And then they see kind of the abstract statistical thinking behind it. You know, they very often think like, oh, a t-test for maybe a certain endpoint is something different to a t-test for other endpoint, yeah, or something like this. But, you know, this kind of abstract thinking is sometimes missing in these fields.
Yeah, these the minutes in the beginning of to also repeat things that have been done before, or maybe just to bring everyone up to speed or just warm them up, it's quite good as well to motivate the people to engage them.
Yeah, maybe that is tip number 3A, repeat things. So you got a bonus.
Could tip, also
so
be say. Number 1A, because it's for the beginning of them.
Yeah.
And the next one is it's a good tip number 4 is to in between interrupt your presentation to ask questions. So yeah, to ask the audience and make sure that you don't lose them. So really, just, you know, to wake them up again. I mean, in between, when you're doing the training, you need to monitor the engagement of your audience anyway. So, oh, how many people are playing with a smartphone? You know, falling asleep at the desk. So it's really, and this is interrupted, get them back on, ask questions, and make sure you don't lose them.
Yeah. And I think that is specifically, that's a big problem for any presentation, of course. But I think for these stats presentations, it's even more important, because you can also, via that, check whether they have understood things, whether you lost them somewhere. Yeah, you give them a little bit time to reflect on things and ask additional questions. And maybe you need to repeat a couple of different things. So that is, you know, has a couple of different nice features in it. And well, I think we all have been sitting in presentations where we got lost after 10 minutes. And the presenter went on for another 30 minutes, which was then not as useful.
Yeah, without looking up.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that is that is really, really important to kind of monitor your audience all the time.
Yeah.
And that is, of course, easier in a face-to-face situation than if you're giving an online presentation. But what I always encourage people is then to use a chat functionality to type in something like there. You can use kind of polls or other things, how you can kind of interact with the audience. It depends, of course, a little bit also on how big the audience is. Kind of if you do that with 100 people, then it's different if you do that with 6 people.
That's, Yeah. And one thing is also, like, if possible, and I had lately some experience with that, is really to use video conferences.
Absolutely.
I mean, just the webcam, you know, on your phone or on the computer. Every notebook now has a webcam. Every phone has it. So use this small, you know, feature, and this is very helpful indeed as well.
Yeah. So as a presenter, I would always turn on the camera because you get across so much more information by showing your face, by showing your body language. And you waste that if you don't turn on the camera. And for the audience, it's also good that they actually see themselves because that helps them to stay focused. Yeah. It's usually,
I was just saying this, but also practice how to behave on video.
Yeah.
It's kind of important, but it's a different topic in itself, but it's just monitor yourself as well. You know, because you sometimes if you're feel like you're on unwatched, then you start playing with your hair. Just take some simple things. So I mean, it's seriously, you know, make sure that you're visible to the audience, but also how you're visible. So just monitor this as well.
Yeah. Well, of course, that is goes together with maybe another bonus tip is to make sure that all the setup works, kind of the logistics around it. Yeah. So that's very, very basic that you are understood and that, you know, everybody can hear you and these kind of things. But it's, you know, sometimes it falls flat on these basic things. I remember I was once at a rather big conference and there were two sessions behind each other on the same topic. And I was one of the presenters in these sessions. And afterwards, someone said to me, "Oh, your presentation was the best one." I said, "Why?" "Well, actually, your presentation was the only one I understood because the audio in the room was that bad that I didn't understand any of the other presenters."
I mean, every one of us knows these teleconferences, you know, we log in and it takes 5-10 minutes that, you know, all the background noise is gone, the echo is gone, and you know, the presenter is being heard and all these things. So this is annoying, and you're already lost when you wait 5 minutes until whatever starts. So that's why I make sure it works.
Yeah. The next one, I think, is a very, very powerful way to communicate, and that is to use contrasts to show the impact. And one example where I come across that very, very often is, for example, handling missing data and showing it if you do it that way or if you do it that way, kind of what is the impact on the outcome. And so contrasting different analysis methods against each other.
Yeah, and that links back to like a real life example, because it really shows, you know, what it means to use statistics or to, you know, whatever you use or whatever you present then. So, you know, if it's handling missing data. I mean, for every way of handling this data, there's an argument.
Yeah.
It's fine. People can understand the argument, but they don't see it. They see it if you show the differences.
Yeah. And you can use also in terms of if you don't analyze data set you have, but you look into the design of a study or the design of analysis and you look into different scenarios. Yeah. So. You want to understand those response relationship and you have alternative ways to model that. And then you can say, okay, if it's that way and we use that approach, then in these kind of scenarios, it looks like that. And if we use a different analysis approach for these different scenarios, it looks like this. Yeah. So that people get a better understanding of what's the mathematical formulas behind to it? Because we often think in formulas, we can read formulas, but non-mathematicians, non-statisticians really struggle with that a lot. So for them, it's much more easier to get into these practical scenarios.
Yeah, always remember that you're talking, or we are today aiming for non-statisticians. So these people may not even understand the mathematical formulas. So they to understand the impact, whatever the work is, what we do, they need to understand the differences in outcome, not the formulas.
Yeah.
So that's why this is where you bring them the explanation in their words, in their thinking, and not in mathematical. Don't try to dive into formulas.
Yeah, and people like to think of scenarios. That's what they're used to. So they have a worst, average, and best case scenario, and for kind of different ideas, or you know, slow recruitment, fast recruitment, average recruitment time scenarios. So you can come up with all kind of different meaningful scenarios and go through them and understand what are the pros and cons for these different analysis approaches or design approaches. It's also nice to contrast kind of, for example, in one study versus another study. Okay, here this analysis approach was used with that outcome. Here another analysis approach was used in a similar study, maybe a different sponsor, and that was the outcome.
Yeah, because this is what they read. That's what they see.
Yeah, yeah. But these contrasts make it much more easy to kind of show the differences and show the impact of different
absolutely.
Approaches. Yeah. Okay, tip number 6.
Or 1B.
Okay, 1B.
Well, it's to have a physician first introduce the example study.
So that is actually a couple of nice ways about that. So I used to do very often kind of the presenting of the study, but if you let a peer of the audience introduce it, so let's say a physician, or if you're training medical liaisons, another medical liaison, or if you're training sales, a salesperson, that helps that they get a kind of understanding in their language. You see where what kind of language they use. You see what kind of problems they have, where they struggle to present it, and where they have the open questions. It also actually takes away work from you, which is quite nice as well.
Well, not really, because usually you should kind of review together with the presenter, or whatever it's presented, because, you know, if this is then off the topic, then what are you going to do? So that's, so, you know, especially salespersons, they might lose it at some point, like at least compared to the eyes of a statistician. So that's why it's just changing the work a little bit more than getting rid of the work.
Yeah.
But what it also does is really that the audience is sympathizing with this, because they don't have the feeling that the arrogant statistician is just talking stats. It is really that you have themselves introduce the topic or a study or whatever it is to understand, to make them understand. You know, I try to make it for you. It's not I'm not doing the stats here. It's for you. And I think that's very, very powerful and helpful to get people from the audience, or people alike, you know, the audience involved to do the introduction and the presentation first in the beginning.
Yeah. It just increases this kind of collaboration, partnership with the people, and this more kind of, we are here in one room together, maybe virtually together, to, you know, help each other and get together in one boat. And also that helps to more easily and naturally get into discussions about topic. Yeah, so you can very easily then engage with a presenter and, you know, then take it from there and go through the different topics. And also it makes it less boring for the audience if there's two presenters or more presenters. Yeah.
So tip number seven?
One last thing for tip number six. So if you do that on a regular basis, one of the examples that I applied quite successfully was a regular journal club. So where for a specific therapeutic area, we got together on a regular basis and looked into top studies in terms of, you know, either our own studies or important competitor studies or so on, and on a regular basis. And then, you know, someone from the audience would always introduce a study, and then you come up with a specific kind of statistical challenges.
So it was like a circle. So different people from the audience was doing it every time.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So tip number seven then.
Yeah. Don't be shy. Speaking about very basic things in statistics, like p-values or something. It's really important that you don't think that, you know, these basic things are just easy to understand for everyone. So that's why bothering? No, I mean, you're talking to non-statisticians. So really, if you talk about p-values, just take a step back, explain it again, very calm, and just explain it to those who didn't understand it or are afraid to ask. You know, I mean, you might be wondering how many people don't remember the t-tests, you know, it's about...
Yeah.
the Russian one is about independent samples. So, I mean, this is really just, you know, make them, you know, bring it up again.
Yeah. There's always quite a fraction in the audience that needs to understand these basic things again. And it links back to an earlier kind of comment that we made about repeating things is where you get the learning. Yeah. Tip number eight. That is maybe a little bit of a controversial one, and it really applies mostly for face-to-face meetings, although you could also use it for virtual meetings. I actually prefer whiteboards over slides, which is maybe against the common trend to use kind of PowerPoint slides wherever. But there's a couple of things where... why I think whiteboards is better. So the first thing is it forces you to explain slowly. You know, it's so easy to put a slide and then go to the next one and the next one and the next one. And you rush through the slides without kind of going through the details. You know, you easily miss kind of what is the axis or, you know, what is this line or what is that one and where is this kind of coming from? And if you kind of show it on a whiteboard and you kind of write things up as you speak, as you develop them, you have a natural kind of way to build up things and the audience very easily can follow that. It also helps you to keep it to the most important things, to keep it simple and not have any kind of, you know, too much distractions.
I do agree in a way. I have some concerns, like just looking at myself, because I would probably forget half the topics if I don't have the slides. I know what you mean, but I think it's. I mean, first of all, it's only for face to face. I think on the computer screen. I mean, you can use whiteboard on presentation. You know, to present in a way, but this is. I think people won't really follow. But what I would suggest is really to use. I would generally use slides, but then once in a while, step back and get examples, specific topics on a whiteboard. So don't use it all the time, but use it as part of the presentation for two reasons. One is what you already mentioned with the reasons why, you know, whiteboard is better than slides, and also to just change the scenario.
Yeah.
To do it, you know, slides on the one side and you know, go to the other side of the room and then use the whiteboard. So I think this, if the location allows, I think this is something that I would be considering rather than doing all on whiteboard.
Yeah, that's a good kind of another good tip that you kind of alternate the different mediums and you speak about certain things there and then you can kind of just thinking on your feet come up with a couple of additional things that you may have no slides for, which is another kind of good way for whiteboards. So creating a slide on the fly is quite difficult.
It is.
Yeah.
But if you use slides, I mean, this is also, you could probably fill one podcast episode for using PowerPoint. But some
episode,
basic
a complete
rules.
Podcast series, probably.
Probably. Yeah. I mean, there are so many mistakes you can do on slides, but no, anyway, but it's what I think what is important is, you know, what's one of the examples for the whiteboard is, you know, keep it simple. Don't overdo it. Don't overdo with the, you know, arrow here and pointing there and interaction between and all these things. I think keep it simple. Like when once you open it, everyone can read it within few seconds. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. And avoid Greek letters.
Oh, yeah. You may have to explain them anyway. Yeah.
And of course, it's also good to build a slide set over time so that you kind of collect slides and add further kind of slides to it. Because if you, especially in the setting where you have regular meetings, then you can go back to earlier slides that you used there as well. And then you, for a couple of things, of course, you know, you can basically have some really general things and then can make them more specific to the different examples. So,
yeah, and you can make use then for these general things also like the backup slides, you know, which are hidden, and then you just pull them out in case there's a question, a specific question. So kind of, And using graphics, pictures, so visualize.
Yes.
That's one of the key important things, most important things for having the audience following you. So if they stare at the slides, try to read a mathematical formula with Greek letters, you know, you lost them.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is where kind of the scenario kind of building comes into, where you can kind of show slides for or graphics for the different scenarios and contrast things. So that is where also graphics and pictures and figures are really, really nice. Okay, tip number 9, use technology for your advantage in virtual settings. So whereas tip number 8, maybe with the whiteboard was especially for the face-to-face meetings, this is much more for the virtual meetings. And there's a couple of very, very nice tools you can use.
Yep. Pulse chats.
Yep.
You know, just to really interact with the audience and get their feedback right away and get the people wake up and be involved. That's very good to use.
Yep. And of course, also in danger of repeating myself to the 100th time, turn your camera on. That's also a kind of use technology for your advantage. And get, you know, very, very professional with the software that you're using. So should be kind of knowing inside out where you can, you know, build things up easily and advance stuff.
Yeah, we already mentioned the whiteboard functionality. So this is available in some of the software or browser-based solutions for these virtual settings as well. And this is also where you can draft something, maybe like a quick a picture or question, or just playing around with it to get some things
Yeah.
You know, get people.
Or highlighters and pointers that you can use, you know.
Yep.
So this is also very, very nice to make it, you know, not just the slides, but you can, when you talk about certain things, you can kind of tick them off or, you know, highlight them or use your pointer to kind of make sure your people have their eyes guided to the point where you're speaking about. Yeah.
Yeah, that's just always remember. I mean, everyone was in the situation of just reading slides on your computer while you hear voice over the phone. So this is something, and the difference really to a real face-to-face setting and a training is that you see where people are pointing at, how people are behaving, how the trainer is acting, interacting with you. And even though, you know, some people are still in the 80s or 90s with the training habits, you know, just remember that this is not, you know, it will not be the audience anymore, and people are interested in following you and being actively involved and interaction in general. So that's why keep them involved and get them their attention by using the functionality of the visual settings.
Yeah. Then let's go to tip number 10, and that is about the pre-read. So I have seen lots of trainings where you get kind of 10 papers as a pre-read. Really, nobody has time to read these. And especially if it's not 10 papers from, you know, stats journals. So make it really easy. And what I recommend is using just the example study, so that everybody has at least kind of read that one and knows about it. Yep. If it's a high profile study, most of the people will read it anyway or have read it anyway, so that it's not, you know, additional things for them. But yeah, sending stats material for pre-read, My experience is nobody reads that, and it's more annoying than helpful.
Yeah, always remember the people. I mean, depending also on the training, you know, if the people are paying for training a lot of money and they are really engaged differently than this, you know, a training that you offer for free just because somebody asks in your company for colleagues and they might come in and, yeah, it might be interesting to talk about it. So they're less interested. If you just stuff them with, you know, 10 papers, it's absolutely clear that nobody will read it.
Yeah.
So that's why make sure, I mean, you might even, you know, spend time on preparing the pre-reading.
Yeah,
it's not only just sending a, you know, the link to Amazon link to the book that they can buy to pre-read. So that's not the way it works. So that's why if you want to get them involved and maybe step up to a certain level or like a common level for everyone, then you might even need to prepare the pre-reading to make it most efficient for the training itself.
Yeah, and of course you know, maybe you have some the example study kind of condensed in slides that you could send to make it easier, or you could, you know, possibly add, you know, one question that they, you know, look into as a, you know, pre-assignment, so to say. But make it really easy. That is really important. And of course, timely.
And it's also, again, depending on the audience, because if you do like a stats presentation for bachelor students, they might not even know what a paper is.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, if you do it to your colleagues who are in the, you know, in the professional environment for years and reading papers up and down for, you know, every day, then one paper is something that they will just quickly, you know, read and be available.
Yeah. Tip number 11, our final tip, is about collecting feedback. Pretty basic tip, but still very, very often forgotten. And I think it's really, really awesome to collect feedback, and especially in these reoccurring meetings, because it helps you to get better over time. You can even show, okay, you know, last time I got the feedback XYZ, and I addressed it in this way. And that shows really that you care about your audience.
Mm-hmm. No, it's an excellent point, I think. And even though it might not be, it's also like, it might not be easy, because I think also for collecting feedback, this should be very well thought through. I mean, we are statisticians. We know how to collect data. Yeah. So, you know, you can ask the right questions or not. And therefore, this is the way. And also here, it's important to engage the people.
Yeah.
You know, you probably know as well for many cases that you get, you know, and just a white paper with some questions on it, and you can tick it and then leave it on your desk before you leave the training. But actually, this is not very
it's nice quantitative, but sometimes a qualitative feedback is much more important. Yeah,
and that's, you know, talk to people as well, get their feedback verbally if you have the chance, to see where gaps are, where questions are, where ideas are for next trainings or meetings. Use electronic form.
Yeah.
I mean, people sometimes are more responsive to a doodle question than they are to a white shaped paper because they don't even know how to use a pen. Yeah. So it's really no. I mean, you know, it's changing. It's so get people involved. Make this an important part of your of your presentation, of your training. Yeah. Even though it's after your training, it's still a very important part for
you. Yeah, you could even potentially do a little bit of a gamification on it, but that's maybe on a different topic. But it also helps you to identify some blind spots in your training skills, your presentation skills. So, you know, see.
Well, it does. Yeah. But you have to ask the right questions for that one.
Yeah.
You have to be brave enough to ask the right questions.
And the right people. So people in the audience that you trust, they will give you honest feedback. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's it for today.
Excellent.
So if you want to kind of find all these tips, of course, like always, they are in the show notes. Just go back to the homepage, and it's really kind of having relevant examples, showing that you care about the audience, you speak in their language, you engage with them, you collaborate with them, you explain things easy and repetitively, and collect feedback to get better and better and better over time. So this is one of the examples where you'll never do it perfect, but you need to start doing it to, you know, improve.
Excellent. You need to get better on this.
Yeah. Awesome. And of course, one thing maybe, and don't fear that you may, you know, become obsolete. You know, these are so basic things usually. You as a statistician will never become obsolete. That is, Some people have this kind of fear, but it's really,
No,
pointless.
No, you're not. Yeah. And especially not if you talk to a non-statistician.
Yeah. Okay, awesome. Nice talking to you. Talk to you next week again.
Okay, bye, Alexander.
This show was created in association with PSI. And next week, I have a guest where we talk about risk-based monitoring. He's an expert in that area and does it for quite some time. So tune in next week again. Thanks for listening. Please visit theeffectivestatistician.com to find the show notes of today and learn more about our podcast, Boost Your Career as a Statistician in the Health.